Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
Survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
So next we have Engineer 775. He is in the house. He's here with me. It is good to see him. Look at that. He's got his glasses, his trifocals on.
If I have to read or not.
Okay, if you have to read. This is Scott Hunt, everyone, Engineer 775. You can tell he's actually engineer. I think does that say engineer behind you?
Actually, it does. A lot of people on YouTube are a bunch of trolls. So you're not an engineer. You're really not. So I do have a master's degree in mechanical engineering from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. So I have some paper that says at least I graduated. And I did work as an engineer.
I should print some and put behind me, you know, like all different. Yeah.
I get it from Etsy.
Etsy? Yeah. You can get your diploma at Etsy. So, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a long time since we got together, and so I appreciate it.
You're a busy guy. You've had a couple years of just work.
Just work. And lots of requests, and it's expanded to pretty much the whole country, helping a lot of DIYers get off the grid or off hybrid. And we have installs back all year. So that's why. So every time the fall rolls around, I'm like, it's my busiest time of year. It's like people start like thinking like squirrels, and they start prepping in the fall. September is like the worst time for me. It's like, why do you do prepper camp in the fall? Can you do it some other time? Because everybody instinctually starts thinking about preparing in the fall. I get blasted in September, October.
Mm-hmm. So some of these people have met you. This is the first time meeting you. So I want to step back and who is Scott Hunt? Who is Engineer 7? How did it all get started? And I mean, start with your childhood.
Oh, we don't have time for this. We don't have time for that.
Okay. Who's Scott? I mean, I know everything. Well, not everything about you, but how did you all get started? How did you get into prepping? How did you take your engineering to actually, you know, off grid? What you're doing now?
Yeah, I guess. Quick thing about my upbringing. My nickname was a college boy. Growing up, I was the only one in my family to go to college. Most of my family's blue collar. My dad ran a body shop. My grandfather owned a lumber yard. Everybody was hands-on. They had mechanics, carpenters, equipment operators, loggers, farmers. And so I had exposure to all of these trades growing up. Product of divorce, I would get, you're going to go over there. My middle name was Get Wood. So when I grew up, it was like, grandma needs firewood for her wood cook stove. So my grandfather collected wood cook stoves. So from an early age, I was exposed to all sorts of prepping equipment, from canners to, you know, growing gardens. And I didn't know anything about preparedness. And, you know, it's just, this was my family. This is what they did. And they worked with their hands. And so I was exposed to, I feel like, everything. I was very blessed to, you know, be 10, 12 years old, running a chainsaw, driving an Al's Challenge tractor, running cultivators, getting hay. So I had a lot of exposure to a lot of cool things that I hated. You know, you're a kid growing up, like, I don't want to do this. Everywhere I go, all I do is work. So my goal, my escape mechanism from all of that was to get good grades. So I got good grades throughout school, straight A student, blah, blah, blah. And I ended up going to the college of my dreams, which was RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, which is upstate New York. It's an engineering school. And I went there and got a master's degree in robotics. That got me hired and moved 900 miles away to South Carolina, where I worked for Michelin Tire. And there, you know, I was like, I thought I was in control. I had my escape from my past. I had my dream job. My wife's a pharmacist. She moved down with me. We're two, you know, whatever. At the time, they were called dinks, right? Dual income, no kid. And we were just working and doing what we thought was the plan. And then the plan changed drastically. I was introduced to Jesus by a coworker at Michelin that basically for 2 years hounded me like a pit bull. And nice. I wasn't raised in a Christian home. I was a heathen at best. And I was exposed to the Word of God for the first time. So can I give my testimony here? You started this. This is who I am.
I know you became a pastor at one point. Yeah, tell us about that.
So at Michelin Tire, first day on the job, this guy sits down next to me and says, Are you ready to die? What happens when you die? If you die today, would you go to hell or would you go to heaven? So he was really hitting me hard. I'm like, oh, wow, I really landed in the Bible belt. I was getting a lot of belt. And so I didn't know how to counter that other than get mad. So at the age of 26, I bought my first Bible and said, I'm going to prove these Bible thumpers wrong. In my arrogance, I started just reading it. And I found a lot of fault with me. So it's like looking it's like looking in a mirror. After 2 years, I was broken, surrendered to the Lord, got saved, believed that he died for me. Without him, I deserve the ground to open up and I'm going into hell. So long story short there, I got saved. And that changed my life drastically. I started study, just like engineering school. I'm back in school. I got to learn this. I have to understand this. And so I started teaching the Bible, and which led to a Bible study in our home, which led to 25 people in my living room, which led to we're starting a church, and I'm resigning from Michelin Tire Corporation, and everybody thought I had lost my mind. Mm-hmm. And so at that long story, and the whole time we had bought a farm in Pickens, South Carolina, and it was kind of our hobby. I didn't golf. I didn't go hunting. I just worked on this farm tinkering on how to pump water, and how to make power, how to do all these things that I like to do. And so that's been my hobby for 30 plus years of how to make energy, how to be energy independent, how to grow my own food, how to have multiple water sources. So before prepping, when the prepping movement started, I was kind of like, hey, wait a minute. I do all those things. I've been doing those all my life. Mm-hmm. And now I've added my engineering degree to my hands-on skills that I learned growing up as a kid. And I'm like, my grandparents were really preppers, but now I'm going to show through some high-tech prepping. And long story short, I became a pastor of a church. And at the same time I was pastoring, I was also prepping, homesteading. I didn't call it prepping at the time. I'm a homesteader. And it just all kind of came together. I'm going really fast here. This is 57 years of my life, folks. 2012, things got really wild, as you remember. In prepping, it was just like, hey, I do all those things. We put 400 hand pumps in people's wells. We did so much work. And it has not stopped since then, helping people get water, helping people get power. The equipment, I'd like, if I have the time to talk about, the technology has changed drastically in the last 10 years since I started prepping and started teaching on preparedness. So we started a business, Practical Preppers. The YouTube channel kind of took off. That's kind of that's how we reach out to people, because nobody around here in Pickens is going to, you know, our power company is against solar. So I have to reach out. The internet's been wonderful for that. So we have a nice, wonderful business. We get to work from the farm. I get to stay on the farm. I still get to tinker here, and we raise cows and chickens and vegetables. And so we try to practice what we preach, whether it's from the Bible or from being a prepper. And for me, it's about people being independent with power, with water, just being independent. And since COVID, things have changed. So, I think everybody came to this. we're being lied to about everything. We're lied to about our nutrition. We're lied to about politics. We're lied. It just, the list never ends. We're lied to about theology or up. So it was a tremendous amount of work that came out of COVID. So many people wanted to go off grid. So many people moved out of California to Utah. You know, they had a lot of resources. They're like, I don't know what to do. I bought 500 acres in Utah. I want to go off grid. So those have become some of our clients. And we still have that. People moving into Tennessee. Tons of people. You see Texas plates, California plates in people's backyards, and they don't really want them there, but they want to go off grid. So that is probably way more than you wanted to know.
No. I did buy an eighth of an acre, and I really need some off grid. I really need some off grid solar and water. Okay. No. Yeah, so you've kind of been in the business of saving lives, and I mean, really, from being a pastor to actually doing off-grid power, solar, and everything. So it's kind of a full circle there, I think. I mean, you're doing it the whole gamut.
Yeah, what don't you do? We love to share the gospel. We teach. I teach the Bible. I'm not pastoring now, but I lead a Bible, men's Bible study every Saturday, and I compartmentalize it. You avoid my hard, tough questions. You try to.
We still got some issues. I got to train you on.
Yes, four issues, folks. I'll just put that out there.
We have some different opinions on some things in the Bible, but the Bible itself absolutely is firm. We're good on that. It's just some things that are in the future. Yeah. I'll educate you on that. I mean, you did send me a PowerPoint and told me to read it and study it. And I haven't done that yet.
You still haven't a year later. I'm just trying to read some. I'm putting my glasses on to read some of these comments that are coming in. An eighth of an acre is better than none. Okay, preppers. Okay.
Well, eighth acre better than. Okay, so I got questions for you. I told you I had a bunch of questions.
Right.
Okay. And none of them are embarrassing.
Okay.
That I know of. The first one is, there's a difference in solar. There's like the DIY solar. Then there's the real true get off the grid solar. So let's say, I know you're laughing already. What's the first step for someone saying, I want to be off the grid? What's the first step they do? Do they look at their, I think it is they look at their wallet first.
I think they look at their family first.
Now,
I laugh because you said DIY, and I joke because it's DIY. It's do it yourself. You said DIY, which we kind of joke is like do yourself in.
Yeah.
Oh, so a lot of people, when they attempt to go off grid, they DIY it. They do themselves.
Okay.
And a lot of times, you know, this is, you said, look at your wallet first. I'm saying it's very stressful depending on how it's done. It puts a lot of stress. If you have children, we saw what isolation did during COVID to a lot of people. They didn't do well. So if you really go remotely off grid, you're the father, the dad, and you're like, we're doing this. You know, the whole Little Caesars, we're going back on the grid. We're going back off the grid. If you don't think through it, you can really do a lot of damage. And and it's not funny. You see people getting divorced. You see, you know, over-preparedness. And that's not the way to go. So, and then the children just, you know, they're having to do things that are difficult. Fetching water, getting food, working hard. They're not seeing their friends. It's a difficult thing to go off grid. I know a lot of families that I've met. I have family that's off. It is not easy. It is not easy. I'm miles.
This is my seventh family, by the way.
This is your seventh family.
Seventh family. All the other ones left me.
So there's so many variables. You know, good choices, choosing the right property. A lot of people just buy. It's very difficult to just buy raw property And if you're financing that, as you know, it costs more, the interest rates are higher. I always try to encourage people to buy a piece of property that has infrastructure on it already. It has the road cut in. It has a septic system. People don't think about the property and how much money. Interest rates are going to be a lot lower on a dwelling. Even if the dwelling is just run down, it's a shack, but it still qualifies for that mortgage. It's smarter to do that because that road's going to cost you $35,000, $40,000 to cut in. The septic system's going to cost you $10,000. The well's going to cost you $20,000. And you start adding up infrastructure that's on a piece of property. You can bulldoze the house, mm-hmm. but you've got all this infrastructure. Pull your RV on there, live in that. Why? It's, and so many people buy a piece of property and they live somewhere else and they never get their project done. It takes them 10 years
right.
to develop that property. And I'm like, no, you need to live there to make the most of it. And people have stuff stolen because they're not there all the time. They're in a place where they don't know the people. And that's the other thing. You really need to know who you're dealing with because you meet the neighbors and the neighbors are like, we're going to steal everything they have. And you see that all the time. People naively go into a community, buy a piece of property. They're not welcome there in a lot of cases. And they have an attitude and they turn the neighbors off and the neighbors turn them in. We've seen that many times, turn them into the local authorities for inspections and right. shut down the job. And I mean, there's a lot of things. And this is part of our consultation service. We walk you through raw land purchase versus already having infrastructure, what to look for, make sure it's on the southern, at least have some southern exposure if you're going mm-hmm. to make your own power. If you're on the north side, you have tremendous amount of heat to produce and to stay warm. It's you're fighting, even if it's a beautiful view and you got all the water, you are going to spend a lot of energy staying warm and it's going to be difficult to produce any electricity. So that's
well, I don't want to interrupt you, but we have a young lady in the chat room. She said, yeah, I lived it. My dad was a total nerd. And I lived this on my farm. Her name is Rebecca, I think her name was. She didn't say all that, but I kind of put that in there for her. Do you know what that means or anything?
Is that my daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, is she really in there?
She is in there.
There she is. Yeah, Reba.
Yeah, here it is. I lived it is what she wrote in there.
She did. They lived it. You know, I sent them a YouTube video from 13 years ago. About 2 days ago when they were loading the wood stove and I'm filming my girls and they were 13 years younger. They were about 10, 12, 13. And I'm filming them and one of them screams out, it's like, do you have to film everything? And I said, you're going to love this when you see this 13 years later. You don't appreciate it now.
Yeah.
So my poor kids, yeah, they were exposed to that. Their favorite is I put the bucket for the tractor out in the pasture and say, you have to fill this with cow manure so that I can dump it in the garden. When I get home from work, I want to be able to dump this in the garden. But your chores for today is to fill the bucket full of crap. And they just, little young girls, they love to do that. So thank you, Reba. I didn't even know she was here.
Yeah. So next question is, so you got to make the choice. So all preppers, I would say all preppers have some sort of backup power, even if it's small solar panels, if it's the orange one or Jackery or something. There's a big difference in having a little solar panel with a couple little battery banks than truly living and having enough power to survive.
Okay. Yes.
And
it's a world of difference.
It's a world of difference. So one is, what is the difference? Two is, at what point do you leave the Jackery and make the commitment? Because it's a huge commitment once you start down the path. So yeah. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. A lot of it comes down to the personality. So I meet customers and I meet with them and I'm like, oh, these folks are very conservative. And so they're not going to be a problem. Their power bill is $80. Then I meet with another couple, same, you know, another couple. I'll just say that their power bill is $800 a month. And their lifestyle, those two lifestyles are so different. So a lot of it comes down to what the expectation is. the $800 a month couple wants to live at the same level. They do not want. So that system is, you know, 5 miles away from, it's thousands of miles away from a Jackery. It has to be a system that is robust, that I'm not getting service calls every day, that it's overpowered. It will meet all their demands, all their needs, and give them all the bells and whistles they want. Those are my favorite customers. Those are my benefactors. Those customers pay the bills. We take good care of them. Now, the other customers are kind of my favorite because they're the sweet little family that just wants to be prepared, and we do what we can, and it's going to be a different system. But a lot of the stuff we do is scalable. I don't do much with the portables anymore. They're emergency generators to keep your food going overnight. They're not long term, in my opinion. You got to figure out who the person is, because I have people with battery banks that cost $1,000, and I have people with battery banks that are $150,000 in a house. So that's the extremes that I deal with. It's like you think that's crazy, but that is really what they have in their home. And it's unbelievable. And they're doing a lot of things, and they want to take care of as many people as they can. This family's just trying to take care of themselves. This family has the goal of, I'm going to take care of 50 people if it hits the fan. And so they've invested what they had, and they put their money where their mouth is. And now they're going, all their family and friends and neighbors are going to come here because they're building this in case something happens. And they have the resources to do it.
What's the life expectancy for like a Jackery? I mean, if you use that in a grid down, would that last 6 months, do you think?
Last 6 months? Oh, yeah. I mean, any lithium iron phosphate system today is good for around 7,000 to 10,000 cycles. It's amazing. So the batteries have changed our conversation. If we had this conversation 3 years ago, it would go totally different. I'm not installing any lead acid batteries at all. So we do all lithium. The performance is phenomenal. I deal with 14 manufacturers. I cannot find the difference in any of the lithium iron phosphate batteries. That is the technology we have right now that's prevalent, that's kind of affordable. It's come down a lot. There will be new battery technology next year, and the price will come down. But right now, the game is lithium iron phosphate, and it works. It works fantastic, and it lasts, you know, but I don't know how long it's going to last. The warranties are a minimum of 10 years. The cycles are for 16 to 20 years. That would be amazing. Solar panels can last forever. They're warrantied for 25 to 30. The inverters are getting better. They're warrantied for 10 plus. So we have some amazing equipment. So when I go into a home now, I can run the whole house. I'm running 5-ton heat pumps, all the well pumps. I couldn't do this before when I first started. I go to prepper camp and talk about, here's how you put a hand pump on. We'll get you water. And then here's your hot water solution. Here's your HVAC solution. Here's, you know, this solution. Now I can give you a system that runs the entire house. We're doing it this week. Tomorrow I'll finish the job. It runs the entire, I run two huge air conditioning systems. I run the whole house plus an electric car charger. And it's amazing how far the technology has come. There's little tricks like soft starts that we add to your condensers. This machine that takes 130 amps to start it now takes 20. What? People don't know about this equipment. So microwave, I can add this little gizmo to this compressor, and now I can actually start this thing with my inverter. I could never start them before. Mm-hmm. And the portable solar is fine. I tell people, if you have a portable system, at least it'll educate you enough so that when somebody comes to try to sell you solar, hopefully they don't rip you off. You know that I need solar, a charge controller, a battery, an inverter, the load, and don't tackle the wool with ass.
With that said, a lot of these people that go door to door, would you agree that over 50% of them are ripping people off?
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering two convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at preppernet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at preppernet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
I don't know the percentage. There's a lot of, but from a preparedness standpoint, none of them are giving the customer what they actually need. So a lot of them are selling. They're not selling battery-based systems. Most of them are not selling battery-based systems. They're selling grid tie systems. When the lights go out, that system doesn't work. It's relying on the grid. So most of those solar companies that come through, the big national solar companies, and blast through your state, knocking and promising you the world, they don't know how to do battery backup. So this, we started with battery backup, and that's all we've ever done. Now I can use batteries, and I don't have to connect to the utility. So the utility now, because the utilities hate solar, and they're going to charge you. Like my co-op charges you, if you have solar on your property, they charge you a monthly rate, plus they give you a generator. It's the same thing that California did. So California mandates solar, and then they charge you for the solar that you have. They're double dip. It's unbelievable. That's why Elon Musk called them out on it. A lot of people don't realize that. They mandate it, and then they charge you a monthly rate for having it on your roof. So it is insane. So now we say, don't interconnect with your utility. You can use them as a backup. Just don't get mad at them. Please. The first thing, and one of the things I wanted to say to Forrest, to everybody, was like, don't make your utility mad at you. Try to be a gray man when it comes to your approach. If you have grid, you can minimize the use of the grid. Just don't make them mad, because you know what they do when they're mad? They pull your meter. And so I have several customers that got very arrogant. And now that they had their new solar system, I'm like, don't make them mad. That's a good backup. That's a, you know, and like, I don't need you guys. I'm not doing this. And they come out and they pull the meter. Now, when you have a cloudy day, or you didn't buy enough battery, your generator's running, and you're spending more on propane than you are on electricity. So don't do that.
The Prepping Academy Podcast. What are you prepping for?
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at preppernet.com.
You're listening to The Prepping Academy, the information you need before the world ends.
Go ahead. Next question.
Next question. Solar, wind, hydro, is solar the winner now? And there's no, I mean, don't even
solar
look at the others.
Solar's the hands down winner, unless you live in a perfect situation for hydro. For example, if you have a river and you have the elevation change, and you don't have to put the turbine 5 miles from your house to harvest the power, and you have rights to the river, because a lot of times you don't own both sides and the neighbor doesn't like you stealing the whole river to go through your penstock. And that happens a lot. The people, you know, they rob that creek and bring it over to their side. You can't. So hydro is cool. I love it. I'm a water guy. My neighbor calls me Magic Water. That's my Indian name. So
I'm learning. You got a lot of names.
Get wood, magic water,
college boy. So,
yes, the so hydro is really cool. It requires maintenance, just like wind. Wind is, you see these wind turbines falling apart, blowing up, burning up. Solar is maintenance free. solar that we do is maintenance free. We put no electronics on our arrays. It's basically dumb rock, a solar panel, silicon wafers. There's nothing out there to fail unless you run your lawnmower into it and break it or you shoot it.
So if you do solar, and yeah, we talked about this earlier, are there incentive, tax incentives or anything the government, if they help you pay for the solar that you install for me, do I have to tie it in with the grid, and can I still be gray man?
You still can be gray man. So each state has all – they and power utilities will offer incentives and rebates and different things. The general across the board this is till 2030 is a 30% federal tax credit. It's not a rebate. It's good. So if your solar system for your home costs $50,000, you can deduct that. It equates to about $15,000 that you are, $50,000 coming off, 30% of that coming off of your taxable income. So you are not, there's no leverage from the government to say you have to do this or that. You've got to connect and all these things. So if you can present to your accountant, this is what I paid for this system. And sometimes people tie the generator with it too. Your generator, your batteries, your solar inverters, your panels. It's a 30% tax credit through 2030.
One thing I want to tell everybody in the chat room, if you'll hold your questions, that way we don't have to stop in my questions, and we'll get to all your questions, but hold them in the end and we'll answer every question. And I think Scott said he would answer every question for $10. Okay. For free, but let's get to them. Just hold them for a little bit, and then we'll go to your questions, and we'll post them, and we'll get to every one of them. I just think I got some good questions. That's why I just don't want
to. I'm great. This is awesome. Ask away.
So next question is.
We didn't really mention it, but solar is the hub. I'll just say this. Because the inverters that we use are hybrid, so they'll accept power from wind, from hydro, from a generator, from your battery, from your solar panels, from the grid. You can take all the power sources that you have available on your property. So if you have a good wind site, wind is great in the winter and solar is good in the summer, utilize it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying. Okay. So overall, solar number one, but if you have a hybrid inverter, I just say don't start with hydro. Don't start with wind. Start with a multimodal inverter that can handle any input, AC or DC.
Okay. So to me, sometimes having a huge solar array is also a security concern as well.
And go ahead, tell me why.
Because I look in the area of my retreat, and I know where every solar panel is because I bring up Google Maps and I look for the large solar panel. And I know if the people in that particular house have a large solar array or solar panels on the roof, I know they have other resources as well. And I'm just saying as we're all preppers here, I look at that for where my retreat is, so I know what is going on. So is there any way, there's no way to hide solar panels?
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Hi, this is Ashley T. Lee Podcast. Join me to hear the Bible read line by line and clearly explained. Listen to the Word of God in your car or home or work while it transforms your mind daily. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect." Knowing the Bible can give you peace and joy in this hectic world. Listen weekly to Ashley T. Lee Podcast on all podcast sites.
No, I mean, I have jokingly, I have a lot of customers. Can you hide them? Yeah, I can hide them
under trees.
They don't work very well when I hide them in the woods. But if you have enough property, and we do hide them, we do put them in places where people can't see them from the road.
Okay.
So, I thought, some people are like, well, I'll just go steal those solar panels when the times are bad, but what are you going to do with that solar panel once you steal it?
Ooh, you know, that's a later question.
Yeah. Is it a later question?
It is a later question.
So it is in some ways a security risk, but what isn't? If you have fence on your property, people know you have something. You know, why do you have a fence around your property? Oh, you have food. You have what's more important? I mean, the food is a lot more important than that solar panel. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
Misconceptions about going off grid. What are people disappointed the most, or what are the, do they think they're just going to live their, I guess you can buy your life as normal with money, but what are some of the biggest things? And people go, well, gosh, that's not everything I thought it was all cut out to be.
The biggest disappointment is the cost. Mm-hmm. And they want to maintain the same lifestyle they had in their suburban house in their nice, beautiful, new 30-acre farmhouse, new build. It doesn't matter how efficient it's built. They still need hot water. They want to take showers. They want to cook. They want to do everything. And when they do this, they don't have their, you know, if they want to do it all electric, it takes a considerable system. So they kind of, I have customers that kind of will cheap out on the battery, and then they'll call me, but the battery didn't go through the night. I said, yes, because, you know, there's two ways to size a battery. You size battery for the performance, meaning how much power do I need right now to do this task versus how much battery storage do I need to get me through the night or through the storm or through a week of rain or through 30 kids or 30 family members show up at Christmas to the off-grid retreat and it doesn't make it. And it's usually the money's the first thing. Sizing of the system, which I spend a lot of time on sizing the system so that you can enjoy your life and not be a slave to going out and starting the generator again to charge up the battery at 2 a.m. because the refrigerator's off. And there's a lot of frustrated off-gridders. Sometimes the integration between the inverters and the generator, we try to make it automatic. And sometimes the generators are too cheap. They're not reliable. They burn up their starters. And by the way, no generator, and the, people might not, most all generators do not have an off-grid warranty. So you think a generator that you bought would be used off-grid, right? Because you're going to use it. But if you go through them all, Generac, Cummins, Kohler, Briggs & Stratton, Honeywell, all of them, none of them have an off-grid warranty. Mm-hmm. If you're running that generator off-grid and you spent $6,000 on it, another whatever to install it, you're into $12,000 on your generator, that is does not have a warranty off-grid. So you go into that. You need to know that. So all these Generac 20K, 22s, 26, if they find out that you're off grid, they won't warranty that because they're not made but to do a 5 year or 500 hours. That's their plan. So these off griders are running their generators every day.
Right. Yeah. That's not good.
That's not good. So the goal is, our goal in designing is minimize the generator. Have a generator. That's your backup. That is just minimize its usage. Make hay while the sun shines. Back to the farming. You know, you can if you maximize the solar array, because that's the only power you can make on this property. Maximize it. Whatever the inverter can max out at, that is your best bet. And you can start small on the battery. You're just going to have to go to bed when the lights go out and stop using stuff.
So I'm going to give you a chance. Yeah, I'm going to give you a chance to geek out just a second here. So I've heard you say here recently that you can now build systems that are pretty much EMP proof.
I have papers that say that. Now, I do not have an EMP weapon, so I'm not able to blast them and prove that. So with Solark, who I've been with for 9 years, their inverters are, you can buy a non-EMP and an EMP hardened inverter. That kit comes with the suppressors and ferrite cores to put on every solar panel, every appliance in your home, in the hopes of that they will protect those pieces of equipment from an EMP. I've been waiting for 3 years for a battery, and they finally have one. So Endure Energy is co-located with Solark. They've gone through the same process, certification process, and so there's now an EMP hardened lithium battery. And so we've just installed two jobs using that. Because before people would do EMP, but I'm like, well, the battery's fried. What good is it? Right. And then I come up with all sorts of backup plans where they could cobble together a lead acid battery out of their vehicles, out of their tractors, out of their four-wheelers, and try to put together some 48-volt battery. I have people pulling in 48-volt lead acid golf carts into their garage, putting an Anderson connector on there. So now, okay, your lithium just fried from the EMP. Now let's hook up your golf cart because it'll at least give you power, not a lot of storage, but it'll allow you to run your home off your golf cart. That was one strategy. So yes, EMP hardening is always there. I know you're going to have Dr. Arthur Bradley on in a couple of weeks, and a great guy. You know, we've always talked about putting Solark, Dr. Arthur Bradley, and EMP Shield. Could these guys all work together? Well, they seemingly cannot. And that's frustrating from my standpoint. They're coming at it from different angles, and it would be nice to have an overall solution. But right now, my best solution is a Solark system with Endure Energy batteries, and everything has a letter. But I sign NDAs like everybody else, so I don't know. They're not going to tell me what they did or how they did it. I just have a letter that says, yeah, it's certified, but how, if an EMP happens, how are we going to go after them?
Right. True.
So
a lot of preppers, they think the safest place to live is underground. And I've noticed in your videos, you've actually helped people put in underground living facilities. First, I want you to touch on how to power that and how that is. It is off grid, but
yeah.
Going underground, there's a more mental thing there than there is dollars in buying the actual.
Yeah. It depends on the size of the system. Depends on the size of the bunker. I'm currently, mm-hmm. I haven't put this video up because I have so much footage. I've just currently done one that is 4 apartments, 30 feet underground. It is an unbelievable facility. It's completely off grid. I've been monitoring it for the last 8 months in terms of its power consumption. It has HVAC, it has water, it has hot water, it has freeze dryers, it has all the septic systems. It's got filters this and filters that. It is so impressive, but it's so difficult to build. It is probably $3 million. It is so ridiculously expensive.
That's it? And
psychological. Well, you wouldn't believe the size of this thing. It's 100 foot long by 80 foot wide.
Dang.
And it is literally 30 feet underground. And so the challenges of getting air in and septic out, a lot, you know, it's an upside down house. You don't have gravity on your side, and you've got to force air in. And so people, my crew, my guys hate it. They hate working there. When we work there, they just mentally, they can take about 2 days of it and they want to get out of there. So we're carrying these batteries, inverters and batteries and water heaters and HVAC, and we're bringing these down this crazy staircase. So mentally, just working on it, just being in that environment it's not natural for human beings to be in a coffin in this thing, because it is just not. And I've told every bunker customer that I have, I don't recommend them. I wouldn't sell you one. I am here to help you not die.
Right.
I am here to give you backups to backups on energy. I know that you need redundancies on your water pump, your water, whether you're hand pumping air in this thing. You need multiple ways to breathe, and you need multiple ways to escape, and you need multiple ways to power this. They're really cool when they're done. They're like, wow, this is an ultimate man cave. It's kind of neat to show your buddies and to hang out. And I'm like, I don't have one. I mean, I've got a root cellar.
That we know that you tell people.
Yeah, I mean, I have a root cellar, but that's as close as I just don't believe in them. And I tell people they're too easy to ruin. They're too easy to infiltrate. They're too easy to stop the airflow. They're still too easy to trap people in. You know, the bunker guys are going to, if they're on here, if they hear this, they're going to just be the, that guy, shut him up.
Right. Yeah.
But I've done everything. I've had the them delivered from Texas on a tractor trailer and lifted them up and carried them and dug the holes and violating every OSHA law known to man, digging these things on where you don't have enough space to put them in. Very dangerous, extremely dangerous. Probably one of the stupidest things I've ever done is put in a bunker.
Well, I hope your wife's off now.
Yeah, she's on a second ago. Yeah, she's like, never again, stop doing this. And so I did it, you know, I wanted to see if I could do it. I just wanted to see if I could do it. I wanted to do the dirt work, the grading, mm-hmm. the installation, all, you know, we have generators that are 30 feet underground running and the exhaust and the heat. And it's quite a system. So from an engineering standpoint, I've got to get, you know, the waste out and electricity work and enough battery and everything working because it's super comfortable inside of these things once everything's working. So they're the ultimate off-grid test, the ultimate off-grid project in terms of getting it to work. But psychologically, people don't like living underground.
So would you say a project, if you worked on a project putting someone in the ground, it's at least the smallest project would be $500,000, wouldn't it? The smallest possible project.
A decent small shelter is about $250,000 to $300,000.
Okay.
That would take care of a family that they could stay in it. They have enough room. They have enough food storage.
Okay. And you're taking orders right now, right?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
I mean, you have no idea how many people I've turned away because I made the mistake of putting those bunker videos on YouTube. So I got contacted by a lot of people that we're doing this. You got to come and do this. You got to come and put it in. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't believe in that.
Right.
I believe in security. I believe that there's better ways to do this, to prepare and be defensive. There's better ways.
Okay. Next question. Now, this is a tough question, but when I say tough, okay, so the grid goes down.
Yep.
The grid is down. Mm-hmm. And we want to harvest items because I go down the street. There's these little machines beside the street telling everybody where there's a turn, and there's solar panels on there. And then you look at all these solar, I mean, if you're going out to harvest solar so you can bring it back and use it, okay, we're going to use the word harvest, not steal, because that sounds totally bad.
Like marauding.
If I was planning that, what items should I store if, you know, that I can make them items work?
Yeah,
you follow what I'm going there?
Yeah, but the things that you have to store are a lot more expensive than that dumb rock that you're marauding.
Okay.
You know, so the solar panel is not the most expensive part of the system. It's going to be the inverter and the batteries. Now, if those systems have batteries in them, then you're ahead of a lot of times, if you're talking about a light cart in a parking lot that has solar panels, they also have charge controllers and batteries in them. We're not trying to tell people how to steal these things, are we?
No.
This is part of preparedness is so that you don't have to go harvest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're would never tell someone to go do that.
But most people, they're not going to have the hub of the system. They need to invert that solar panel DC power into something that will keep their refrigerator going. So if they don't have the inverter, what are they going to do with that panel? What are they going to do with those batteries? Nothing. They need to understand. They need to have an understanding of what they're doing before they go harvest.
So my off-grid business, when the poop hits the fan, is to get solar panels and charge car batteries for people. Because there'll be lots of car batteries just laying around in the cars. And I thought, If I could charge them, I could probably sell that battery. Someone can get power for a couple.
And how are you going to charge them?
With a solar panel and a charge controller.
Okay. Well, you better, you know, if you're just going to have the right volt, you better have a charge controller that does 12, 24, 36, 48 volt. You got to have
exactly.
The right
charger. They're 12-volt batteries. So, I mean.
You're just, here's Forrest with two leads, just touching the battery and with a voltmeter.
Well, I didn't say it was a good business.
Okay. We've done a lot of funny things with just solar panels. I mean, we've welded. I've seriesed a bunch of panels together, and it'll throw a plasma ball that is like gigantic. It's scary. I mean, you can do 300-400 volts, and just you can weld. You can hook that to an element on a water heater and heat water and boil water in a bucket. So you can do some things. Like if you want to make hot water and you harvest those solar panels, you can heat water with that, with an $8 element out of your water heater. You can hook it directly to it. You can heat water. There's a lot of cool little experiments. But that is that really what you want people to know?
It's kind of a rough way to go. That is a rough way. It sure is. So what skills would you recommend that people just hire Scott Hunt, Practical Preppers, for all solar? Or would you recommend that, hey, if you're going to do a system of 1 kilowatt or less, just learn the skills yourself? I mean,
I have 4 or 5 times a week I am talking to a DIYer that some of them are unbelievably skilled already. They have unbelievable knowledge, electrical, hands-on, whatever, and they just need a little guidance and they're off and they build a really nice functioning system. Other people do need their hands held through the whole process, and that's fine. And some people, we have installers all over the country now that we say, no, go talk to Bill in Texas. Go talk to, you know, Bryce down in Florida. He's a great guy. He's going to hook you up. So, you know, but we do help a lot of people, educate them on what they need to know. Some people you can kind of tell is like, you don't know which way to turn a screwdriver. So you're just let me do it. And we have, you know, I'll be nice. People that just, they're their own worst enemy on the internet, shopping for prices and parts. They don't know what they're looking at, and they end up buying junk and things that don't work well. And so we have to go fix a lot of those systems, and don't waste your money, because you're going to have to throw all that out and start over with something that really works.
So you're saying my charge controllers that I got from AliExpress.
They buy the cheapest inverters and the cheapest charge controllers. And then when they try to get hold of the company, the tech support is horrendous, or they can't get a hold of them. And now they didn't save any money. They just wasted $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 on junk.
Right.
Because the relays keep failing, or they don't parallel. There's just infinite. Don't do that. So the biggest problem I have with people that are too cheap and they think they're smarter. They're smarter than you are. And they go do this and they make a mess of their off-grid project. And
can it be dangerous? I guess it can be.
Once they get shocked a few times, they stop. But it's not like they're, you know, nobody's dying. Thankfully, most systems are 48 volts, and it's not until you get like 60 volts across the heart that you are going to die. Okay. It's like, a tenth of an amp, and you can die. But now some of the systems are up there. The batteries are high voltage, and they're going up to 800 volts. Now you're talking some serious damage. But most 48-volt systems, they'll bite you, but they're not going to.
Okay. One of my last questions, and I warned you for this one, is.
Last question already?
From me. There's people who are going to be typing questions. I asked for questions, and the format is you put 4 question marks and then your question. That way we can see clearly it's a question. But so that's the format. But here's my last question before. I watched a movie called 10 Cloverfield Lane, and John Goodman has this bunker.
Okay.
And he had this barrel of liquid. It was so freaky. It's a weird movie. It's a prepper movie, but does that stuff really work? And you were talking, I mean, that's just so weird. I mean, I'm not buying any of that by any means. I don't even know what it's called. But I've heard people call it lime pits, but this was a barrel of chemicals that he would put people in and that would just eat their entire body. Is that real?
I guess you'd have to call it, what's the guy in Breaking Bad? Didn't he do that? Breaking Bad, they did that. I think hydrofluoric acid.
Oh, maybe. Kind of
hydrofluoric is the go-to, hydrochloric and strength. But I think a forensic scientist would say, no, you're not going to be able to hide everything.
Okay.
That would be my opinion, that you're not able to get rid of all the evidence. You know, you're watching horror movies, Forrest. What's going on here?
It's a prepping movie. It's John Abrams. So here's the first question we got from Echo Pacpa, which you know who that is. Scott, yes. How's the carnivore diet going?
I don't know what Forrest first put up for advertising this. I said, man, that's when I was over 300 pounds. They're like, thanks a lot, Forrest. I will tell you, the carnivore diet, this is prepping. Part of what I wanted to find out about carnivore, because I raise cows and I have chickens, could I live on just
meat?
And so I started listening to Dr. Ken Berry and several other people that have been around for a long time doing carnivore, and people that have been doing carnivore for 12 years. And so I found that it's an elimination diet. So for a prepper, what is the best diet? What's the best diet for a prepper in difficult times? And with a minimal amount of food, I could totally survive on meat. And I did it a strict carnivore for 6 months. I lost 92 pounds.
Dang.
And I was working, and it was amazing. But it is boring. Survival wise, I don't have an issue. But when there's breads and pastas and things around, and I want to live like a normal person, it's a difficult diet. You know, you see Jordan Peterson do it, it's just salt and steak and beef. Mm-hmm. And he's not happy about it. He'll let you know it stinks. But it has restored his health. He's come back from the dead because he's done carnivore or the lion diet. So it absolutely works. You don't need a carb. I didn't eat a carb for 6 months. Zero carb, just beef, preferably ribeyes, hot, you know, sausage, any kind of animal, snout to tail, carnivore works. And so I was like, as a prepper, what could I do? I know my cows can turn my forage into ribeyes. I could eat 3 dump trucks full of kale and not have equate to, you know, a couple of ribeyes in terms of nutrition. So I'm like, nutritionally, between eggs and beef, ruminants, venison, goats, sheep, and deer and cows, that is the best. The ruminants are the best animals nutritionally. And take that, all you vegans. And then probably no vegans here. But steak, if you could, I could live on steak and eggs one meal a day, but it's not fun.
Right, right.
So it works. And some people have to do it for autoimmune issues. I don't, thankfully, but it really, really works. You can, I went from 5-4 sizes in pants, shirts, had changed all my clothes, but my goal, I was just carrying around I'm still carrying around way too much weight, but it works.
Okay, get your glasses on. We got questions now. Get your glasses on.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm not sure if this is a question or more of a statement.
Can microinverters work with an off-grid system?
No, they're on the screen. Look on the screen.
I'm looking on the screen.
No, underneath our video.
Oh. Please look at continuous duty gens. Yeah, Generac does not make one. Cummins Onan does. Yes, so we sell Cummins Onan. Ours are propane power. We have a 48-volt system. So what is the question?
There's no question there, I guess. So let's go to the next one. Scott.
Oh, what was their question? They didn't ask a
question. Well, they didn't have a question on that. That was it. I think that was more of a statement.
What would you recommend as a basic solar backup system for anyone not ready for totally upgrade? So, yeah, most of what we do are called hybrids. It uses it can use the grid. You're not off-grid. You can use the batteries. You can use solar. And what I love, our systems are scalable. Start with one solar array, not one panel, but one array. It's usually going to be a minimum of 6 panels, an inverter, and a battery bank that can take grid and pass it through. People don't, of course, this is something that a lot of people don't understand. If you have a 200-amp service, and 90 million houses in the United States have a 200-amp service, do you have a 200-amp service on your home?
Yes.
So the inverters that we use can take that entire 200 amps from the utility and pass it through the machine. You don't have to do critical loads or backup panels anymore. You can pass all of that through. You might not have enough battery to do full off-grid or enough solar to do full off-grid, but this inverter becomes the hub for your home, and I can pass that power through to run my air, to run everything. So when the power goes out, guess what happens? You have electricity supplied to your entire electrical panel. Does that mean you can run the entire electrical panel? No, but I can go through it. I can manage breakers or think and say, okay, while the sun's shining, I'm going to heat my water. And then we're going to take showers. And then we're going to go cook. And then we're going to stagger or stage things so that I can live within the means of the small system that I have. And I can do everything. And usually this one inverter has enough capability to run every load that you have in your home. It can't run them all. But you can.
So I have two different panels in my house.
Yeah.
I have a panel for my regular house. The power's coming in from the grid. Then I have one that my generator connects to within my house. And so I got to turn the external power off.
Yeah.
And the other power runs through the main panel. Then to the appliances that I'm running. I think it's standard operations for.
But it is not necessary anymore. You can the technology has changed so much. So the systems that I run, we run our house, we run our business on these inverters that are able to pass power through to make up for any lack of power that your solar panels or batteries or generator can provide. Then if the grid goes out, you're in a different mindset now. Grid is down. I have to conserve. But you still have a system that is tied to everything. People that have a critical loads panel with 6 little loads on their transfer switch, well, yes, you got your well pump, you got your refrigerator, but I sure wish I could have run this or run that. And now you can do that by selecting. We won't even get into nerding out on load management. I do see a lot of questions on Enphase there, but go ahead. The poly or the blue poly cells, most of the manufacturers are doing monos now. Poly was big for a while. They both work. If you get a great deal on the polys, that's fine. People, the blue, they don't like the look of them. A mono panel is black. Black tends to blend. Again, back to security. When you see black out, it just doesn't pop. It doesn't catch the eye like the polys do. Voltage-wise, amperage-wise, there's a lot of poly systems out there that work just fine. But I would recommend mono. And I would recommend bifacial. That's another thing. A lot of people, all the panels that we put in the last 2 years are bifacial. They make power from both sides. There's no back sheet. They make power from both sides. They produce about 10% more power. But that's...
How to charge a battery with the generator?
So how to charge a battery with a generator? There's a lot of ways to do it. So a lot of inverters, people just say inverter, but a lot of inverters are inverter chargers. So when the generator is connected to the inverter charger, the inverter charger is connected to your battery. It charges the battery. However, you can get an external charger for your generator hooked directly to your battery, and they make a lot of those. One of the best ones recently is a ChargeVerter. Look up ChargeVerter, and it's especially because these systems are 48 volts, 24 volt systems, 48 volts. You can hook up a ChargeVerter directly to your battery bank and run your Champion, your Predator, your inexpensive generator through a ChargeVerter. And the ChargeVerter will actually clean it up. And so you can make what's nice about it, it's a separate charging source that isn't, say your inverter has issues and you kill the battery and it won't start back up. You can take your generator and a ChargeVerter and bring that battery back to life. And now the inverter wakes up and you're back to normal. It's a really nice solution it's a 5,000 watt charger connected to a generator. And it's programmable. So if your generator can't produce 5,000, it's only 3,500. You can set it, make it set so that you can use it. But look up the ChargeVerter. Is an awesome. It's an awesome product.
Next question is, why do you hate Prepper Camp?
I do not hate
Prepper. That's not the question, by the way. But I just know that you haven't been coming recently.
Like I said in the beginning, September, I am stacked full. I have customers that are yelling, when are you coming to start this job? So I've always said this to whatever. It's
you're busy.
I'm just slammed. I am slammed this time of year.
Yep.
So, and then the other part, like somebody else said in the comments, I'd love to go to Prepper Camp and not teach, just walk around, hang out with folks. Mm-hmm. Then Prepper Camp would be fun.
You would have a swarm around you though, because people just follow you and ask you questions. So the next question is, do they not have lithium batteries in Canada?
Do they not have them?
No lithium.
Yeah, they have lithium.
Okay.
Of course they do. I don't know if that's his question. So one of the Canadian companies is Discover. Discover Batteries is a lithium battery manufacturer in Canada. So need UL9540 certified batteries with built-in heaters. There's several of those out there. They're UL9540A now. And they have fire suppression. They have fire suppression systems built in. Even EG4 has fire suppression now. So there's a lot of batteries that have the fire suppression. So that shouldn't be an issue. Yes, you can do lithium in Canada. Yes, you can do heaters. I can get you an EG4 battery right now that has a heater in it. It is UL9540A, and it's lithium. It's LiFePO like you're looking for. So just contact me. I didn't get his last question.
Oh.
But he had Pites 5 coming soon, V5. There's so many options. We can talk, Peter. There's 14 companies I'm working with on batteries. There's lots of options.
Hi, good time to tell someone how to get in touch with you.
So through our website, through our email, info@practicalpreppers.com, you can go to our website, practicalpreppers.com. That's usually the easiest way. Can Enphase microinverters work with an off-grid system? They sure can. So the Enphase microinverters are all over the country and on a lot of roofs are connected to the grid. So what we do with the Enphase systems is we hijack them using a solar converter and we AC couple. The output of the solar is mimicking the grid. It wakes up the Enphase microinverter, and then the microinverter starts pushing power back through the inverter to charge the batteries. It's called AC coupling. It's done all the time. I have Enphase micros AC coupled to my inverters right now. So I have AC and DC coupled to the inverter. These inverters are amazing. So I'm not putting in a shameless plug. I've been with them 9 years. They went from junky little 3K inverters to systems that are also, and just so people don't know this, they're also three-phase 208 and three-phase 480 inverters out there. There's businesses that want to go off-grid. There's full-on manufacturing facilities that don't want to be connected to the grid. And so the capability there is like, how do we do this? Well, we use high-voltage batteries. We use battery-based inverters. Solark has a solution to do that as well. So you can take your business fully off-grid. If you have machine tools that need 208, 480, it can be done. In your opinion, what is the best type battery currently, and do you see the technology significantly improving? And technology is always improving, and I think the sodium battery is coming next. This is my opinion. China's putting it, BYD is putting it in vehicles. So the saltwater battery was out a few years ago called Aquion, and everybody was hoped because that was a battery that wasn't nasty like a lithium battery. The raw materials were recyclable. It just didn't have the performance. And then, of course, there was politics and the company went bankrupt. But it's coming back. The sodium battery is really neat. So there's technology. I don't know if I answered this question, but the lithium iron phosphates work great. They last a long time. They're easy to work with, but there's new stuff coming. Just learning about prepping, and I have seen different company solar panels used to, but
Is that really realistic in the long run? Different company solar panels used together. Yeah, you shouldn't do that unless their electrical characteristics are really close, meaning the voltage, the amps, you know, people mix and match stuff. I see people cobble all sorts of things together and it works, but it's like the lowest common denominator is going to kill you. It's like when you take a single solar panel and you put your hand over a cell, what does that solar panel do? It kind of all short circuits to that place where your hand is. Okay. It's an electrical device. Now, if I take that and I put it with something else that doesn't match, I put something else, you're not helping yourself. It's people cobble batteries together and make battery banks. You're not supposed to mix and match batteries because you got different BMSs, but are people doing it? They're doing it all the time. So do you still enjoy meat? Absolutely. A ribeye is my favorite choice. What about wind power? Unfortunately, I've only done a few. Where I live, wind is horrible. There's just no wind. There's not enough wind that is laminar flow, meaning constant wind. We have violent people. Like, oh, it's windy here all the time. Yeah, but it's always the turbines are always fighting to find the wind, and they can't. You have to be way up, and you've got to get laminar flow of wind to keep that prop moving and not fighting, looking for wind all the time. So I've had customers argue with me, just put it up. I said, okay, we'll put it up. And this thing's got dancing all over the place. And it's really aggravating. And the one we put up in Virginia, a large one, 24-foot diameter, it sounds like a boomerang's being thrown at your head. It's something you do not want to have in your yard. It's very obnoxious.
Really?
So okay. I don't recommend wind unless, like, I have customers that love it. They're in Nebraska. They're in North Dakota, and they have a 30 mile an hour average wind. They can harvest a lot of energy, but most people, well, people are in this, I know your podcast goes everywhere, but if you don't have consistent wind, you're wasting your money. Mm.
So you may be under NDA, but beta version of Solar Smart Load Panel.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
No, I've had it on the wall for over a year and a half. It doesn't work. The software is not ready. Could it eliminate a critical loads panel? Yes. Load management is the future of solar. So there's several companies out there that have solutions. There's the Lumen panel. There's the, what's the big, not Savant. Savant is the other really, the one that I think is the best is Savant. So picture being able to load manage your entire electrical panel. And so it's going to basically be a rules-based load management. I have this much battery now and this much base load going on my inverter. Yes, you can turn on your water heater. Or no, you can't turn on your water heater. Mm. And then once the load is down and you have enough battery capacity, yes, you can turn that water heater on. So it's a simple rules-based load management system. Solar, I think, this is my opinion, was too, they're like, oh, we're using AI. We're getting so sophisticated. This is going to learn your home seasonally. I think they started off too ambitious on what their load management system was, where Savant went with a very logical rules base. So to answer your question, Peter, yes, you do not. A good load management system can save you an entire inverter. You don't have to have another inverter because I can run load. I'm never going to have both heat pumps come at the same time. I'm never going to have all these loads come on simultaneously. I'll start one, run it, and just, can I run this one? Can I run my car charger now? It will determine that for you.
Here's your golf cart question. We have a Solark system installed. We have a four-wheeler, 96-volt lead acid. We use as a backup after EMP. We split them in 248 sets. Is that...
Yeah, that's if you can split your battery into 248 sets, you have a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the other way is to step it down, and that's probably more. A mean well will make a transformer to step that 96 down to 48. That's another thing to look at if you don't want to split the battery up. You could do a DC to DC converter from 96 to 48 volts.
So this next question is, what's your favorite battery for a whole house? How many and where do you install them? And can you give me all the details so that I can do it myself?
Yeah, this is normal. No, I don't have a favorite battery. So some people install batteries based on aesthetics. They want it to look good. Some people install them because of the space constraints they have. Some people, my favorite battery is a server rack style battery because it doesn't put, every one of those batteries has its own BMS in it. So I have backups to backups. I have redundancy. Some of the bigger batteries have one BMS controlling three or four modules. And if that one BMS fails, I lose my whole battery. So a server rack style battery, and there's a ton of them on the market from EG4s to the Pites to the Endures to SOKs. I mean, the list goes on and on. So server rack battery, if I lose one of those batteries, I'm not down. If I lose two of them, I'm not down. So having them in a rack, like a server rack with bus bars integrated and casters, everybody forgets the casters. Being able to, you get, this is a very heavy item when you finally build it out. You want to be able to move it out to work on it, set it back in, lockable doors, keeps your kids out from anybody getting hurt. So a server rack battery out there. So currently I have Pites. And I have EG4s, I have Home Grids, I have ARCs, I have Fortress. They all perform the same. I'm not a great Tesla. I don't like the NMCs. They're nickel metal cobalt. They're about 3,500 cycles. People don't realize that either. That's a battery that's about half the life cycle of a lithium iron phosphate. So we go with lithium iron phosphates.
So I've got a question. Don't look at the one on the screen yet. So I built internet data centers 20 years ago, and we had racks and racks and racks of batteries all connected to each other. But we had this neat little machine that cost a fortune, and it was a flywheel, and that thing would spin and it would hum and that was like, that would create power, I guess, until the generator. What did that flywheel thing do? You familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So the flywheel was an energy storage device. So you have your batteries are energy storage. Your flywheel is a mechanical energy storage.
Yes.
And it would bridge the gap between your electrical generator because you couldn't have any downtime. So the flywheel rotated. So if something went down, that flywheel's not going down. What would happen if you stopped the flywheel instantly? Something's going to blow up. So a flywheel is awesome. I want one.
That thing cost us a fortune. We had one in all our data centers. If I remember, but they're like, tell me if I'm wrong, but my memory is like they were about $150,000 a piece.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. To have a flywheel, I would always want a flywheel under my house spinning away. And, you know, you would have no interruption of power. And that's why the data centers have them. Interruption. And that's why now the inverters have gotten so good. Like SolarC is 4 millisecond transfer time. So there's, when the grid goes down, you have 4 milliseconds. So you don't lose any data.
Right.
And that's why they're used for UPSs and banks use them. Yep. And so the site, so back then data center, back when you, that was, you know, dinosaur age that you had, were doing that. So you probably,
That room was $1 million room. If you count our transfer switch, our batteries, at that time, when we were building data centers in 2000, it was great. I mean, you walk in there and go, there's $1 million of equipment in here.
Yeah. But the flywheel is awesome. I've never actually put my hands on one that is for energy storage. I think it's great. I'm a mechanical engineer, so I love flywheels. So, anyway, best hand pump for a well 180 foot deep would be a simple pump. And Russell, we need to know your static water level because that's where the hand pump actually pumps water from. Wherever the water and air come together, that's where you're actually pumping from. So you could have a 180 foot deep well, but is the static water level, that means the distance from the ground level down to the top of that water, it could be 50 feet, 40 feet, 30 feet. So we need to, you know those details. But the simple pump, I literally have put 455 pumps in myself, hand pump, simple pump. So I'm very familiar with that pump. I know it works. And so that's the answer to that question. How many panels from the new place in Duncan? How are the panels from the new place in Duncan? Absolutely great. If I could share pictures, I'd show it to you now. The cool thing, this is a question about panels I put up on YouTube about being made in the United States. And so I have a panel manufacturer that's in my backyard now, which is a new cool move. I actually had them deliver the panels to my job site in South Carolina this last week. And that saved me a whole day. It was free.
Nice.
So the free shipping, and they're bifacials. They built beautifully, and they're listening to my feedback and the leads. Everything about the panel electrically, mechanically is checking out. And I will hook them up tomorrow and actually see how they power the system. So I'm very happy. So we put our racking was made in Michigan. The panels were made in Duncan, Spartanburg, South Carolina. We're getting some American-made products, so that's a good feeling too.
So Peter, I guess who was clarifying his question about no lithium indoor batteries, then he went to
their indoor
certification. Then he said he's going to email you.
Most every battery now is 9540A or they're going out of business.
What's a liquid metal battery?
Is it Ambry? Is you talking about the flow battery? So there's batteries called flow batteries that are liquid. I could be wrong on the Ambry, but a flow battery. I'm just looking it up. Ambry battery. Is it a
flow? I know what a Flowbee is.
No, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Is that I saw that, but I haven't. So is it a flow battery? The Ambry? They're liquid metal. Oh, do they call it a flow? The flow batteries are cool. You have an anode, a cathode, and a liquid, and you're pumping from the anode to the cathode. And you usually see them in their large installations in like a shipping. This whole shipping container is a battery. And so the electrolyte is being pumped and it is like refreshed. So it's a battery that could be last forever kind of thing. I don't know. Ambry liquid metal. I don't know if it is. Is it a flow battery, folks? Anyway, it's industrial. It's probably way beyond what you could afford. Echo Pop, you had to do that to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have not installed the EG418K. You're going to get me in trouble. So I was presented with one, given one, I'm basically loyal to Solark. I'm tired of changing inverters. I really feel that inverter, I know where it was made and I know who made it, and it's private brand labeled and blah, blah, blah. It has some cool features and the capabilities, and, they're new in the game, and I'll just say that Solark's got them by 10 years. So, why is guy ask that question? I'm getting me in trouble. It probably works fine. I am not installed. A lot of people come to me and say, well, this inverter is going to save me money. I say, okay, a $60,000 solar system, and you have saved yourself a couple thousand, $1,500, $2,000 on the inverter out of $60,000. So people will tell you you're saving tons of money. There's a lot more to a solar system than just the inverter. The electrical work, the permitting, the ground mounts, the solar panels, the wires, the code compliance. So I'm getting all fired up about that question, Echo Papa. So I'll stay out of that. All right, what does Sonia have to say?
There's a large 200-foot cross, 4-foot deep lazy river. She wants to put what micro hydro system should she use? What would you suggest?
That's the hardest. Those are the hardest. There's no fall. So these are like undershot wheels. People put wheels out in a river and they try to, people have put pontoon boats out and they've tried to, just anchor it in the river so that it's turning the wheel. There is a, there's one that was in Chile where you take a, you build a channel away from the lazy river off to your property, capture that water, run it through. You got to create the fall. You just can't defy physics. It's, you know, the formula is head times volume divided by 10. You cannot defy it. So it's like, I have four, I've got a, you know, 25 gallons a minute falling 40 feet. That's 25 times 40 at 1,000 and divided by 10. That's 100. I can make 100 watts. I can run a 100 watt light bulb after all, after you build this monstrosity. You're wasting your time. It's a cool thing to look at. A lot of people say, oh, look at the wheels turning. Look at the wheels turning. I said, yeah, well, hook it to the charge controller and the battery and watch the brakes go on. So they never talk about the load. So we can talk about that. A lot of people think that just because it's moved, you just don't have the potential energy in a lazy river. It's just not there.
Tell me if this is just something I made up in my head. Isn't there a way to take that and make a funnel out of it and build up enough? I've seen people.
Yeah, if you look up, I don't know if you're thinking of it's the company's called Turbulent. I'm not ignoring you.
They make it into like a almost like a tornado kind of circular system that can speed up.
Turbulent. I don't even know if they're in business. This is a while. It's Turbulent. Look up turbulent.be. Okay. This is for that other lady too. Turbulent is ready to change the world, but it's quite a bit of construction to get to channel that water. You know, I went right for a motorcycle ride today and I stop at every hydro plant because I'm fascinated by hydro. And I look at how they have their penstock set up. And it's always a tremendous release of water and a tremendous drop. So you can't make something out of nothing. Head, the amount of elevation times the volume divided by 10. Volume in gallons per minute, head in feet divided by 10. That's how much power your hydro system is going to make. And it doesn't matter if it's undershot, Pelton, Turgo, Mike. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't violate that formula. And so, but Turbulent is what I think, Forrest, you're thinking of. It's kind of it's a really neat spiral effect, but yeah. it still doesn't defy the formula. People say, oh, you're an engineer. You're just locked in a box. I'm like, no, this stuff works. I mean, you can't defy the math.
You're Scott Nye, the science guy, aren't you? The engineer guy. Vertical axis wind turbine.
They're cool. Whatever captures the wind more. I mean, I think they're cool. I think they're awesome. I think they're artwork. I mean, I think they're great. The horizontal is, there's not a lot of. Duke, go solar. Solar works. I know solar works. I monitor 100 systems, literally monitor 100 systems. I have so much SCADA data of how systems work in all different, in every state in this country. It's fun. It's fun. The amount of data that I nerd on to see, oh, this works good there. This works good. These settings work better here for this battery. I don't waste my time with wind. I just don't waste the time of wind. Now, if that's the only thing you have, go for it. It's not going to, vertical or horizontal is not going to make much of a difference. The nice thing about some of the verticals, they have a lower startup RPM. So you use that. Use that to your advantage.
Okay. You know, this is a subject between me, you, and Echo Papa for sure. We've talked about this for years and I've talked to you.
Yeah. I haven't pursued it. This is how I got into water pumping. Mm-hmm. This is how water was moved in the United States. This started in 1797. Double acting rams came into play in 1865. This is how water was delivered around the world. If you had elevation, and that's the thing. A lot of people can't take advantage of a ram pump. They're a fascinating piece of equipment, but it's a niche market. And now the reason I'm not doing ram pumps is because solar pumps are the most efficient use of solar energy in the world. So just pump the water with a solar panel. It is so much easier.
And you know, I hired a private investigator to find the people that own, was it Rifle?
Rifle Ram.
And we found them, and I actually talked to one of the, it was an Indian family from India that owned all this. And I think, you know, I'm not sure what else to say, but it was such a sore subject within the family because they couldn't get the business to work. That company folded.
It's a lost art. That company's been sold probably 20 times. It started in Virginia in the 1800s. Fantastic product. I still have a Rifle Ram here that operates. It's just something that it's an antique. It's cool. They're museum pieces. But we've moved on from that. And there's so much more capability with a solar pump than a ram pump. But if you want an EMP proof mechanical system, then you can look at a ram if it makes sense for your property. If you have enough elevation change with your water to run the ram, you lose, for every gallon that you pump, you lose 8. So you have to have enough water, you have to have volume and fall to get it. And you know, it's like hydro. Does it work? Well, maybe it does. It might work, but by the time I get the power to where I need it, I've lost a lot.
Yep. This is from Jerry.
Okay, sounds good so far. Continue. But a small solar system and then upgrade there or just pay for the bigger one. You could start and scale. Like I said, you can scale. You could start. Again, the inverter is the hub. So like if it's off grid, I recommend a Solark 12K inverter because of all the breakers that come along with it. You can put 12 of those inverters together in the future to run the world in your neighbor's world. So you can start with one. It's like I know this inverter can stack all these subsequent helpers. And so start with one. Don't cheap out and buy a 120 volt inverter that you can't stack. I would bite the bullet and buy an inverter that you can grow into. And you can just keep adding depending on what you want to do. It's like, okay, I need more power. Add an inverter. You've already built the system. And go ahead and, so I could tell you how small you can make your array and your battery to make it work while you're building. And then expand your battery, expand your array, expand your inverters if you need to. And the 12K gives you so many options. One of the coolest things, one of the best off-grid installations I have is in Wyoming. It's at 8,000 feet elevation. Propane's an issue, burning at that elevation. A lot of things are an issue there. So I have two Solark 12Ks, and I use the diversion load controllers built into them to heat all their water for free. So I'm not heating water off of batteries. I'm heating water directly off the solar. When you're off grid and your batteries are full and it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon and you don't have much to do, where does all the power go? It doesn't go anywhere. It's potential energy. So now I turn the diversion load controller on and I heat my water for the day. Water heaters are so well insulated. Now I got hot water for the next day that I heated the day before. And I'm doing that for free. I do that in the bunkers as well. All the water heating is done through smart loads, through diversion load control. That's fun. So I've got an off-grid cabin at 8,000 feet and I keep it from freezing. It gets 25 below zero. He's got radiant floor. So I heat a giant water tank. And that keeps that house, which is 3,500 square feet, from freezing in Wyoming in brutal conditions. I'm doing it with solar. People don't believe it. But this, so I have two cold climate off-grid projects. One's in Canada, right on the border, and one's in Wyoming. And I'm like, if I can make those work, anybody, every other place works fine. And there's a cold climate institute in Alaska that does solar. And they do other refrigerants and things that are in super brutal, you know, panels have to be vertical on the side of shipping containers to make the, you know, the sun is so low, and they can only do it for 8 months out of the year. That's another rabbit. But to answer that question, a solar 12K in an off-grid situation with diversion load control is your best friend for off-grid, in my opinion. That's the inverter that I've gone to for everybody that's been off-grid. Now, if it's just a small hunting cabin and you're never going to need more power, then you could do an 8K. You could do a 5K. But you're not going to be able to expand. So if you, I don't want you to box yourself in. Like, man, I wish I bought the 12 and spent $500 more. Now I have something that can grow. Because I find a lot of these people, they buy a house. And they're like, well, I want to Airbnb this. I got an RV park. And then in the back, I got tent platforms I'm renting out. So the people keep growing on these properties. I'm like, you should have got the 12K. And anyway,
next. Okay, last question.
Last question.
Yeah.
12 watts solar direct. Okay. What
do
can
you,
I do?
I don't even know what that is. You know what that pump
so is? Yes, he's got an SQ Flex pump. It's probably a 6 SQF3 or an 11 SQF2. He's got four panels, 300 watt panels that are tied. This is the best pump in the world for pumping water. It's a direct DC pump. It'll take 30 volts up to 300 volts DC, 96 volts, 95 or 96 volts AC, up to 265 volts AC. The pump is awesome. And it'll pump water 800 feet in the air and 5 gallons a minute on that amount of solar that he has. So it's a great pump. It's pretty much impossible to EMP harden. So I didn't help him much there. So what I would do on the panels, so that pump can come with a controller, an IO101 and a CU200. You don't need those. You can go directly from the panels. You might already have it this way. You go from the panels to that pump. And those pumps are $2,500. So they're very expensive. I don't know of a way to protect it from EMP other than to buy another one. You buy another pump, you put it in a Faraday cage, and you have panels in a Faraday cage, and if it fries, you pull them out and install it. Does that, I hope that answered the question, but I do not know how to protect a pump like that.
That means it can't be protected then. Are you there, Scott? Did you freeze when I did that? Where are you? He froze.
What happened?
I don't know. You talking EMP stuff, and all of a sudden EMP Shield sent some things our way.
EMP hit. So did you close it out?
No, we're still on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're still on. I was going to throw this up there so people can get in touch with you. I mean, we've gone almost 2 hours, and, you know, I don't want you to fall asleep, Scott. So,
oh, I'm good. This is all I do.
Well, that was all the questions that I had. I mean, that's it.
That's great.
Man, that's some good stuff. So going off grid is not as easy as you think.
It is not easy. It is not easy. It's expensive and, but it can be planned out extremely well. That one I mentioned in Wyoming, the equipment when I started with that customer wasn't as good. I was using Magnum, and it just, the equipment wasn't as good as what he has now. So it was a learning process. The technology has changed, so I'm very confident going off grid now compared to where I was before. I was so heavy reliant on a generator. Got to have a generator because this stuff can't power it. People want to live. They want everything. So I still recommend a generator in off-grid, but not as expensive of a generator. And I don't want to run it unless it's an emergency. So that's it's been getting better and better, the equipment.
Well, that's awesome. I think you're coming back. I forgot the other date that we set, but you're coming back. So everyone, just you can save your questions, and we'll hit them again sometime. But he's coming back. But you can find Scott on YouTube. That's in your website, practicalpreppers.com, right?
Yes, practicalpreppers.com. Yeah, I mean, you can go to engineer775 and message me, but it's the easiest thing is to send me an email, info@practicalpreppers.com, which is on our website, and we do consultation sign-ups, and we, yeah. So we got office staff that'll answer or get your question. If I'm out working and you can't get a hold of me, they'll get a message to me.
Yeah, so guys, so Scott's in the business. He's been helping preppers for years. So, I mean, if you have a simple question, but you might just need to just sign up and spend an hour with him. And because he gets paid to do this. He loves you guys, but he doesn't love you that much.
our consultation, it's $200 for an hour of consultation. And I usually go longer than that. We do a lot of prep time before that. And so that way you get undivided attention, and we work on your house, on your project, and we design, and then we work with your AHJ, your county, your company. We can hold your hand through the whole thing. And, and sometimes the worst part of solar is the paperwork. The technology, the technical side is not, we've done so many of them that we're not intimidated by that. It's the dealing with the bureaucracy of getting your system inspected and interconnected to a utility. If you have utility, if you're off grid, that's easier. That's better. And some of you live in counties that don't require inspection. I love those. Those nice. Are easy.
Yep. Well, that's it, Scott. Hey, thank you so much for coming on. And I know some of these people are going to contact you. I know some are asking me how to get to you directly. And, but like you said, the best way, I don't have an inside scoop. When I email Scott, it's at info@practicalpreppers.com. So that's what you need to do as well. So is there anything coming up for you, or we're just going to see? Is it in December you're coming on again? I think it is.
I think so. I think you said okay. December. Yeah. So nothing. I mean, I will be going to a solar show, an Amish solar show. That's the only event I'm going to up in Pennsylvania. And believe it or not, the Amish are wonderful off-gridders, aren't they? And yes. There's been a whole community of solar off-gridding Amish for a long time. People don't realize the two orders of Amish, old order Amish and new order, that they can't use the grid, right? The grid's of the devil. So they, to them, in their church, yeah. Theology. They run all their businesses as off-grid businesses, their homes, their farms, and they've gotten really, really good in the last 20 years in doing solar. So, it's fun to go hang out with those folks. So I go up there, just, it's refreshing. They're not caught up in the nonsense that we get caught up in. So I just like to go hang out with them for a couple of days and talk solar and nerd out with them. I'm nerding out with the Amish on solar.
Nice. That is crazy. Well, guys, thank you for joining PrepperNet Live.
Hey, everybody.
And
good night.
And amazing with Wallace, of course. And we'll see you guys next week. Make sure you have your emergency equipment. Go to PrepperNet.net to find out that equipment list, and make sure you join Engineer775 on YouTube and practicalpreppers.com. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.